Sanson family, the chief executioners of France. Sanson's during the age of Napoleon. Now, the executioner during this time was finding his task more and more distasteful and loathsome. Sanson tried to ease his conscience by the practice of medicine, by his donations of bread to the poor, by living as quiet and as dignified a life outside of his work as possible, and by repeating over and over again, "I am only the instrument. It is justice that strikes." To one who questioned him about his feelings after he had guillotined a man, he replied, "I feel no more remorse than anyone who is required to be present at an execution." He spoke the words but could not believe them. Try as he might, he never succeeded in convincing himself of their truth. The only reason he continued was the knowledge that without his job, he would be penniless. There were dozens of executioners, not to mention their sons, wives, widows, and other relatives, whose works and means of earning a living ended with the Revolution. Only a handful managed to procure small pensions from the government. The remainder found themselves in dire poverty. A vivid example of what happened when executioners tried to earn a living by other means was an occurrence actually within the Sanson family. Louis Gabriel Sanson, son of Louis Censeur Charlemagne, executioner of Provence and the cousin of Henri, decided to abandon the family profession and strike out on his own. Leaving his parents' home, he settled in Troyes, where he apprenticed himself to an ironsmith. Encouraged that no one seemed to recognize his name during his apprenticeship, he opened a blacksmith shop, only to discover that no one remains anonymous in a provincial town. Local curiosity just can't tolerate it. The moment word circulated regarding Louis Gabriel's ancestry, no one came near him. He had no choice but to close his shop and move back to Provence, completely dependent upon his mother, who by then was a widow living on a pension of 400 francs a year. He returned to the Maison de Bureau, situated outside the walls of Provence, a small stone dwelling that's still standing today. When his mother's pension ceased at her death, he became dependent upon the municipality for his meager and miserable existence. As executioner of Paris, Henri Sanson was in a happier situation than his associates. Because there were fewer executions to perform, he had been able to reduce the number of his aides down to 2, no longer requiring the 7 to 9 that his father had needed during the Revolution, and his salary had remained the same. A further advantage existed that the government was now reimbursing him for his expenses, and inasmuch as no one seemed to check them, he indulged in a bit of, shall we say, exaggeration. These sources of income, plus the money he earned in the practice of medicine, made his living a comfortable one. However, he was quite aware that not only were executions on the decrease, but that a new, and to him alarming, trend of thought menaced his livelihood. Every day he's quoted as having said to an acquaintance, "The efforts of the philanthropists threaten my existence as they continue to speak out for the suppression of capital punishment. I assure you, monsieur, that it would be a great pity if this occurred, because not one of the persons who has passed our way could have been rehabilitated had he been given life." A harsh statement from a man who loathed his job and pitied his victims, perhaps delivered in the hope that it would be quoted in the public press and stem the tide of public opinion, preserving his job and protecting his income. As Monsieur de Paris, Henri would be the last to suffer the loss of his position. But how long would that position exist? Under the Bourbon Restoration, which was 1814 to 1830, his salary would be slashed to 12,000 francs a year, and then Louis-Philippe would cut it to 8,000. But Henri Sanson knew what fears, doubts, and worries must be put aside. The die had been cast almost 200 years ago, and his future had been arranged for him before he was born. And the future would be no different for his son, Henri Clément, and the sooner the boy realized it, the easier life would be for him. But Henri Clément had no desire to proceed in his father's footsteps. He said to him, "I shall never have the courage to guillotine a man," he said. "You have no choice," was the reply. "Sooner you get used to the Place de Grève, the better." Terrified at what was to come, 16-year-old Henri Clément steeled himself for his first experience on the scaffold. The execution was scheduled to take place on March the 20th, 1815. It was that of an army officer, a lieutenant named Danton, dismissed by the Bourbon monarchy and subsequently sentenced to the guillotine for the murders of his brother and his aunt. But something far more significant and far more important to the French people than the execution of ex-army officer would mark the calendar on March the 20th, 1815. In 1812, Napoleon, whose victorious Grand Army had subjugated most of Europe, had decided to move on Russia. After defeating the Russians at Borodino, he then marched on Moscow, only to be forced into a disastrous retreat 5 weeks later. From that point on, his empire began to collapse. Finally, in April of 1814, Napoleon was forced to abdicate. Granted a pension of 2 million francs a year and sovereignty over the island of Elba, he departed. Louis XVIII, brother of Louis XVI, was proclaimed King of France. But in February of 1815, Napoleon escaped from Elba and landed in near Caen and began marching north. At Grenoble on March the 7th, in Lyon on March the 10th, and at the Fontainebleau on the 20th, the people were eagerly awaiting his arrival in the Tuileries on March the 20th. Louis XVIII had been a colorless figure compared to the fiery little Corsican. Not only did the French see in Bonaparte the hope of a proud future, but both the peasants and the bourgeoisie feared and mistrusted the Restoration government. Suspicious that the word restoration might mean a restoration of privilege and rank, so a rousing welcome awaited Napoleon. And aware that enthusiastic crowds would jam every street, the Ministry of Justice decided it could not permit anything as sordid as an execution to mar the emperor's triumphant entry into the capital city. So the first execution for Henri Clement was postponed until March the 29th. Henri Clement breathed a sigh of relief. He even dared hope that Napoleon, a military man himself, might pardon the ex-officer. But no act of clemency was forthcoming. Even if the news of an execution had reached the emperor's desk, it was more probable the task of organizing an army to take precedence over the fate of one misguided and unfortunate soldier. On March the 29th, Henri and his son escorted their victim to the Place de Grève as scheduled. The poor man screaming his innocence the entire length of the route, sickened by the sound of Danton's repeated cry of, "I am innocent, I am innocent," Henri Clement averted his eyes when the guillotine blade descended, then fled from the scene in tears streaming unashamedly down his cheeks. He acquitted himself no more honorably on the occasion of his first trip to the scaffold as the executioner. In 1819, Henri succumbed to an attack of pleurisy and was unable to get up from his bed. On January the 13th, Henri Clement and his assistants went to fetch the prisoner, a member of the light infantry of the Garde Royale named Foulard, who had been convicted of murder. He had killed two women for the sole purpose of stealing a watch and some gold earrings. The executioner described the scene himself. Quote, "We arrived at the Place de Grève. The guillotine stretched its two red arms into the sky, and the pale rays of a winter sun danced on the polished steel blade. The abbe, Montes, a priest known for his aid to the condemned, turned to Henri Clement and asked him if he had taken his father's place. When the executioner nodded, he said, quote, "It takes courage to carry out your task. We walked towards the same end, you and I, but by different roads. You represent the justice of man, and I represent the mercy of God. May I ask a favor in his name? Please do not give the signal to begin until this poor child pronounces the words, 'God, I commit my soul to your keeping.'" This poor child was 20 years old, actually the same age as the executioner. Henri Clement could not mount the steps. Knowing there was no escape, he realized he had to legalize the proceeding by his presence. But realizing he could not summon the strength to perform the task, he ordered his first assistant, Fauconnier, to assume command. And then, with subordinates carried out his duties, Henri Clement Sanson, the seventh generation of his family to hold the title of Monsieur de Paris, stood at the foot of the wooden staircase like a frightened child. Witnesses reported that when the moment came, he flinched as if a heavy blade had come down on his own neck. Now, of course, Henri Clement will be the last of the Sansons. So we're approaching the end of this particular series, but it still has a ways to play out yet. because I believe it's in the 1840s when the Sansons are finally out of the execution business. Now, the sources for this, The Legacy of Death by Levy, The History of Capital Punishment by Scott, The Encyclopedia of Murder by Wilson, Collin, and Pittman, Septgeneration d'Executioner, 1688-1847 by Henri Sanson, and of course, Madame Tussaud's Memoirs by Madame Tussaud. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the merchandise, particularly the new course that I'm offering, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.